It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I have not seen one scintilla of evidence that this president colluded, conspired, confederated with Russia. And neither has anyone else, or you may rest assured Adam Schiff would have leaked it. So that's why they've moved off of collusion onto obstruction of justice, which is now their current preoccupation.
That was one of my favorite clips of the morning. That was Trey Gowdy on the Sunday show, and you heard what he said. The funniest part about it was, if there were collusion, you can rest assured Adam Schiff would have leaked it. Adam Schiff is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, not the chairman, but the next ranking, the ranking member. So he's the Democratic head of that committee. But, of course, Devin Nunes is the Republican. He's the actual chairman. And you remember Adam Schiff was the one that manufactured this whole charge against Devin Nunes to get him taken off out of his duties while the House investigated him for something, because he came forward about all the things that he had seen in the White House. He was called over to look at these documents, and that's when this all began. Devin Nunes doing a press conference out in front of the White House. It was just amazing. So since then, you see, Adam Schiff is that guy with the wild eyes who peers on. You know, sometimes he can seem really normal. And then other times his eyes go wild. Well, that describes a lot of people on the left, doesn't it? But Adam Schiff, of course, you might remember that he's the one that's said that there is absolutely collusion. But when he's been asked to present the evidence, he doesn't present the evidence. And so on ABC News is George Stephanopoulos. Schiff said that Trump is acting like someone who's compromised. And so he's just digging his heels in. It may very well be that he's compromised, or it may very well be that he believes that he's compromised, that the Russians have information on him. So it just goes on and on. But something happened over the weekend that really is so important, and that's what we're going to spend a great deal of the show on. I'll let CBS News tell the story, then I'm going to jump in.
Waking up at his Bedminster golf course, President Trump fired off a series of tweets blasting his own Department of Justice after it released more than 400 pages related to foreign surveillance warrants targeting Carter Page. It describes the former Trump campaign advisor as an agent of a foreign power and states, quote, the FBI believes that Page has been collaborating and conspiring with the Russian government.
This is so ridiculous. It's just beyond words.
Page responded this morning.
I've never been an agent of the foreign power in any by any stretch of the imagination.
The president tweeted that the ridiculously heavily redacted documents prove the FBI misled the courts, describing the surveillance as an illegal scam. GOP Senator Marco Rubio told CBS the surveillance was justified.
They did not spy on the campaign from anything and everything that I have seen. You have an individual here who has openly bragged about his ties to Russia and Russians.
The DOJ release comes as the commander-in-chief faces criticism for not backing U.S. intelligence on election interference while standing next to Russia's president in Helsinki. Today, the president reiterated that his meeting with Vladimir Putin was great. Former Secretary of State John Kerry said it was anything but.
I found it shocking.
All right, that's enough. I don't care about that. I wanted to talk about the report that came out on Saturday night, which they did. And, of course, that was a CBS spin. Can I explain to you the significance of this? This is a document of 400 pages that's finally the initial FISA application, that's the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Court, to wiretap Carter Page, which is how, well, at least on paper, this surveillance of the Trump campaign began. And now we know a lot of things about this. I'm going to wait because Chris Farrell from Judicial Watch is going to join us in just a few minutes, and I'm going to let Chris tell you what they actually found. But why is this important? It's important because, as we have said, we've talked about it on the show, but I'll just reiterate. when a FISA warrant is presented in that secret FISA court, one FBI agent goes in and presents it. My husband used to do this. That's why we know a lot about it. It's a secret court. Nobody knows where it is. Nobody names the judge. Nobody knows about this. But you have to assure that court that every jot and tittle, every T crossed and every I dotted is true. You can't just bring rumors. You can't bring things you think, newspaper clippings that allege writers. You know, you have to have proof. One time, my husband Bruce said this on the air when I talked to him about it last, that one time when he was doing a FISA application, it was so thick, and he actually was instructed to go back and find out the color of a car mentioned in this FISA warrant. Not just the car make and year, but the color. That's how detailed they were and how careful. That's what the FBI used to do. But this was this. Now we know that there's trouble. This is really trouble in writing. I think more than half of it was redacted. But it came out Saturday night when nobody, of course, was watching. And you heard how CBS spinned it. Marco Rubio, I don't know. Marco Rubio has lost his mind. But I don't know whose team he's on. But we have serious problems, and I will let Chris, when he joins us, tell us more about that. You won't want to miss it because there are more details, and we've learned a lot. So stay tuned. Something else happened yesterday, last night, actually. You know, President Rouhani of Iran has been threatening us. He's been very angry at President Trump for threatening to reimpose sanctions. Iran is facing real economic troubles. Rouhani himself is very, very wealthy. Of course, we helped. We gave them billions of dollars in cash, you remember. But the people don't have it, and there's beginning to be riots and trouble in the streets. He's mad at Trump for moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He's mad at President Trump for banning travel to the U.S. from certain Muslim-majority countries. And then this is what he most recently said. He warned the president to stop playing with the lion's tail and threatening, or else you will regret it. So last night, the president tweeted President Rouhani in caps, "Never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious." That's your president responding to President Rouhani. How different. How very different. All right, so over the weekend, you know, all of these protests are just organic people, dangerous things happening. You know, just what, last week or week before last, you remember that kid was in a Whataburger in, I think, Texas? Yeah. And he had soda thrown into his face. There was a video of it, remember? And his Make America Great Again hat ripped off, and it was just an ugly scene. Was a Kino Jimenez who did it. And his excuse, he said that seeing the hat had the same effect on him that a Ku Klux Klan hat would have had. So now in Seattle, another kid has been attacked by two grown adults. Ashton Hess and his family were waiting outside of a Starbucks Reserve roastery when a woman knocked Make America Great Again cap off his head and a man spat on it. "That's my property, dude," Hess can be heard saying in a video posted. "Come on." The man can be heard saying, "Get the blank out of this city. You're not welcome here," the woman can be heard saying in the video. The man, Hess wrote on the, now Hess is Ashton, he's the teenager, wrote on his YouTube video, "Continued to curse at and flip off my family. I did absolutely nothing to provoke anyone. I was completely blindsided when I was hit." Now, interestingly enough, someone on Twitter has weighed in with a handle at the 3thenShane, a self-described 22-year-old non-binary they/them. You know what that is, right? That's like when you don't identify with any sex. He's a non-binary they/them. It is a non-binary they/them. Has admitted to being one of the two people involved bullying the Belleville, Washington honor student. And so this is what's happening. And then, of course, Maxine Waters had a group of protesters out in front of her office. I think it was late last week, maybe Friday. I don't know if you saw the video of that, but it was just horrendous. They were screaming, "America was never great. It's hard to describe this, really. Even when you describe it in words, unless you use their vulgarities, you can't describe how upsetting it was to just watch that. So they laid this American flag down in front of Maxine Waters' office and, put inflammatory materials on it and then burned it and then cheered. You know, just it's disturbing. You know, it's just very disturbing. So Maxine Waters now has issued a statement saying that some people came to sort of to advance their own agendas, that she doesn't support that kind of thing. But the problem is, of course, you know what the problem is. Maxine has pretty much given a call to action to make people in the Trump administration feel unwelcome everywhere. So she's going to have to backtrack a lot to get out of that. Now we find out that in Massachusetts, just last week, children attended an Antifa camp. Antifa, remember, is that it's a left-wing militaristic, radical left-wing militaristic conglomeration of loosely affiliated groups that employ violence and intimidation tactics against people who they identify as fascist, racist, bigots, or anyone deemed to be in the far right. They're the ones that wear black and wear the masks and do all the attacking. That's Antifa. So these kids are attending an Antifa camp. A writer, dubbed it the commie camp. Kids at Camp Kinderland in Tolland, Massachusetts, designed nearly 50 Antifa flags. The flags were complete with Antifa's hallmark colors, red and black, as well as the organization's logo. One of the pictures, posted was by Mark Bray, who was a Dartmouth scholar, posted to Twitter, including Bray's book on Antifa titled Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. So this is what happened in Massachusetts just last week. You can see that things are just degenerating. And I don't know, how big a group. It doesn't matter. You know, a small group within a country, a subversive group, can do tremendous damage. And we have a lot of subversive groups working and being highly funded by the Soros family, by George Soros, and by other entities. There's just a lot of money being poured into that. And so this is interesting because remember last week when James Comey urged voters to back Democrats in November's midterm elections? He said that Republicans have proven incapable of fulfilling the founders' design that, quote, ambition must counteract ambition, end quote. That'll be interesting. Keep that in mind when I talk to Chris Farrell about what James Comey and his group did. It's just amazing that he would have the audacity to write that. But that's really not the point of this conversation. So he just tweeted over the weekend, Democrats, please, please don't lose your minds. The president and his Republican Party are counting on you to do exactly that. America's great middle wants sensible, balanced, ethical leadership. Oh, he must have retweeted it because then he adds, Democrats, please, please don't lose your minds and rush to the socialist left. Well, of course, he's addressing, there is a big socialist movement right now. I don't know how big it is. There's some estimates. But this new New York City congressional candidate is kind of carrying the water right now. She's the star, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, 28 years old, former bartender. She defeated House Democratic Caucus Chairman Joe Crowley in a primary last month. I'm sure you've seen her. And what their platform is, they have 42 candidates, by the way, running nationwide. They want Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, free college tuition, abolish the Federal Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and also they want health care for all, which is estimated it would cost us at least $32 trillion. So James Comey's warning them not to lose their minds. He should know what it's like to lose your mind. I think he must surely, in his moments of sanity, realize he may have lost his at some level. All right, when we return, this FISA warrant that suddenly showed up late Saturday night, just an amazing story. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit **345. That's **345. **345.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. Hurricane Harvey was the second worst disaster ever seen on American soil. 8 Days of Hope responded to that need in Houston, Texas, back in March, where 4,700 volunteers came from all over the world and all 50 states to love and serve people in need. When we left, we realized that there was still much more to do. So many people still were hurting, hundreds of thousands of families looking for somebody, anybody to help them. Here's your chance. 8 Days of Hope 16. We'll be back in Southeast Houston October 13th through October 20th. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who are semi-skilled, and people with no skills or less skilled and want to give back. For more information, you go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. We're expecting about 2,500 volunteers from all over America to go back to Houston to love and serve those in need. Hope to see you in Houston, 8daysofhope.com. For more information, 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
War memorial crosses at national cemeteries could be in legal jeopardy, including the crosses at Arlington National Cemetery. That warning came from federal judge Paul Niemeyer, the Fourth Circuit declaring the 90-year-old Peace Cross in Maryland as unconstitutional because it sits on public property, ruling in favor of the American Humanist Association, a group that wants to eradicate Christianity from the public marketplace. That cross, by the way, honored 49 local men who died during World War I. Judge Niemeyer was one of three dissenting voices. He said the majority's ruling put at risk hundreds of monuments that feature religious symbols like a cross. First Liberty Institute and Jones Day, the law firms representing the American Legion, vowed to appeal to the Supreme Court, and they should. Otherwise, the atheist will be free to commandeer bulldozers and turn our war memorials across the nation into piles of rubble. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What I told people was that you're not even going to hear about the dossier when we finally learn what's in the FISA warrants, that what the FBI will do is what the FBI always does, which is they'll take 7 or 8 facts that are important, they'll scrub them so that the FBI can verify and corroborate them, and those will be put into the affidavit, and that'll be the only thing you hear about. When you read this thing, it's astonishing. It's as if they took the dossier and slapped
whole cloth.
A district court caption on it and gave it to the to the judge, which is exactly what I told people would never happen. I must say, I mean, this is so bad that they ought to be looking at the judges who signed off on this stuff, not just the people who gave it. And if you've done this stuff, this is so bad, it screams out at you. But this says, this is just three and a half lines. The FBI has reviewed this verified application for accuracy in accordance with its procedures. They haven't verified it, and it's not accurate. So, you know, the two most important things, 3.5 lines, they can't even get that right. What they're saying is the assertions we're making to the court, we verified. Now, just to explain how this works, let's say, forget about FISA and intelligence, let's say it's a drug case. And I want a warrant because I think they're selling or they're making heroin packages in a house, right? So I bring my agent to the judge and I say, we need a search warrant. And the judge says, fine, what's your probable cause? And I say, judge, I have this great agent here. Every year he wins agent of the year. He is like the best agent. He's got the most awards. The judge will look at me and say, but what's the probable cause? What did the people see? And who are the people who saw it?
All right, that was the portion of Andy McCarthy on Fox and Friends over the weekend, Sunday morning, after this FISA warrant came out. Remember, this is a warrant that was a permission to the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Court, asking for permission to surveil Carter Page, who was really nothing more than, I think, gadfly is actually a good name for him. When it came to the Trump campaign, sort of a wannabe, kind of around the surface, never ever met with President Trump. But that's what started this entire story of Trump, the Trump campaign colluding with Russia, was that warrant. When I heard about this warrant coming out, the first person I thought of was Chris Farrell, because Chris is the director of investigations and research at Judicial Watch. And Judicial Watch was the one who had been trying to get this document for some time. They had subpoenaed it and finally, that succeeded Saturday night. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, Sandy. Great to be on with you.
All right. So how does this happen? Do they, like, fax it to you overnight on Saturday? Do they have somebody deliver it? What did they do?
They were actually supposed to produce the documentation on Friday, and we had gotten a call initially saying, oh, we're FedExing it to you, which, of course, then stretches it out to Monday, right? And then mysteriously, it came electronically on Saturday. I guess that they realized that, hey, look, we're not kidding about the deadline the court set, and we want it. And so they kind of hustled to get it to us. And so we got it electronically, and we immediately started pouring over it. And Andy McCarthy's summary in the lead-in audio clip is excellent. It's right on the nose.
All right, so just in a word, Chris, you know so much about this. Sometimes making it simple is the hardest thing. But help people understand, why is this particular document so important?
Well, it's the foundation piece for the entire Russia hoax. All the efforts to go after what was the Trump candidacy, then the Trump transition, and then even the Trump administration, his presidency, all the hysteria and the wild claims of, you know, Russia, are grounded in this, and it's part of the, there's an effort to penetrate the campaign, there's an effort to, subvert the election, the Trump people are all connected to the Russians. All of this blather that you've heard now, unfortunately for years, rests on this conspiracy theory. This phonied up warrant that was used as a means to go after this Carter Page guy. You know, look, let's be very clear. He's a self-announced, self-appointed foreign policy advisor. He never had a job. He never had, with respect to the Trump campaign and Trump administration, he never had a position with them. He never had a pass. He never had a bill, a business card. No desk, no phone, no nothing. He's just a guy who said, I'm a foreign policy guy, and I support Trump. That's the beginning and end of his involvement with respect to the president. So he never met the president. He never participated in any policy meetings. Zero, nothing. So, it's really a house of cards. It's all this kind of make-believe, wishful thinking stacked up on top of it, of each other. And it is a gross abuse of counterintelligence process and legal procedure and of the courts, right? They went into three different federal judges and lied in order to keep the smear going.
Let me just contrast what you just said about Carter Page, Chris, because this is the warrant actually says the FBI believes Carter Page has been the subject of targeted recruitment by the Russian government. And then it goes on to say they redacted blank undermine and influence the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential election in violation of U.S. criminal law. Mr. Page is a former foreign policy advisor to a candidate for U.S. president. So they really even overplay their hand into, surely they must have known if they'd done their research that Carter was.
And look, you know, there are instances in the warrant when you read through it where Page was actually talking to the FBI. He had been interviewed by them. He wrote to them at one point. So I mean, if this is you know, Boris Badenov, right? If he's this great big scary Russian spy, why didn't they just arrest him? Well, because there's nothing there to arrest the guy on. Did he have business in Russia? Yeah, he worked for some financial investment firm thing. But that doesn't mean the guy's a spy, and it certainly doesn't mean that he's subverting an election or all the other hysterical language that's used in the warrant application.
Chris, before you joined us, I re-explained, because I didn't want to waste our time with a lot of the groundwork stuff, I re-explained the FISA court and how in the past, I've told you, you know this, my husband was the attorney that presented the FISA court applications, and from his own knowledge, right after 9/11, the FBI combed over the information they presented meticulously. One time during a case he was presenting before the court, they wanted him to get the color of the car mentioned. And I mean, that's how meticulous they were about everything. And so, and then it's not the agent that swears to the veracity. He may be one of them. It's the attorney general, or it's higher up than that. So who signed these things? Do we know based
right.
on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of the problem is that there's a, you know, the warrant application itself is signed by a very senior Justice Department official, normally the attorney general or deputy attorney general. There's a handful of people that have the authority to actually, you know, sign the warrant application. But the warrant application always contains an enclosure or an appendix, which is an affidavit of usually a senior FBI agent or a senior DOJ attorney who's actively involved with firsthand knowledge of the investigation. And so the judge really, once he peels back the application, he's looking at the affidavit of the senior FBI agent or the other attorney involved. And he wants to know from the person with firsthand direct knowledge, one of the lead investigators on the case, he wants to know from them their sworn testimony as to why they need this information. And it's usually quite explicit, as you've mentioned. They want, you know, license plate, make, model, color. They want, you know, I'm using the car as an example, but they want specificity. And they want to know why and how it is that you know what you know, and why you must have this information in order to make your case. There's got to be probable cause. There's got to be enough factual foundation for the judge to go, okay, this is the next logical step. I understand what you're asking for. It makes sense. And therefore, I'm granting you permission to take the next sort of, you know, invasive measure to build your case. And it is usually quite excruciating in the level of detail because we don't exercise these authorities, you know, on a whim. It's supposed to be thoroughly scrubbed. And this is the polar opposite of that. This is, you know, phonied up paperwork, stuff that Christopher Steele funneled through Michael Isikoff at Yahoo News and recycled it in an effort to kind of make it seem more legit. This is an outrageous abuse of the FISA court procedure.
Well, plus the obvious, which you and I know this so well, but we have to restate, this was opposition research that was done by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign. This is what the FBI was presenting.
You know, it wasn't even opposition research. It was opposition manufacturing.
Yeah, well.
This is stuff that was made up. This isn't going out and checking someone's record and really kind of digging in and being tough on the facts. This is stuff that's just invented. It's mythology. It's not even real.
You know, Chris, I'll never forget the day that the dossier story came out, the very first time I ever heard of it. And I read it. I read large portions of it. And no one had commented on it yet. It just came into my inbox. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm a lay person. You know, I mean, obviously I know more than the normal lay person because I do this, but I just couldn't believe it was on its face just trashy tabloid silliness. And that's what they really, that's what's so amazing about all this. It's not even sophisticated. But I want to ask you something. We now know for a fact, we've been told by, it's kind of gotten out, that in the FISA warrant, they did not tell the judges that who prepared this dossier, that it was done by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's camp. They left that out. Why is that? What's that? Why is that so important? Why was that such an important omission?
Because it just destroys the credibility of the information itself. When you look at you know, the motive, the conduct, the intention, where's this information coming from, and how did you get it? And as soon as you say, "Oh, it's a hit piece funded by the opposition," well, then the judge is going to throw his hands up and say, "What are you doing in my chambers? Get out of here! This is you know, smear campaign stuff." Unless you can answer all the basic interrogatives in specificity, right? Who, what, when, where, how, and why? You need to be able to explain it and not say, "Well, we have sources who say." Who's the source? What did they see? Where, how, when? Give me names, dates, times, and places. If you can't do that, and they couldn't, well, then the judge is going to say, "You're wasting my time. Get out of here."
One thing that is still unclear to me, and maybe it is, maybe it's just not known, is Judge Contreras was, we think, one of the judges, and he is a judge in the FISA court, and he's a very close friend of Peter Strzok's. They have dinner together, they get together, or they're, I don't know. And so what's happened to him? He was pulled off the case, and what do we know about him in relationship to this document? Anything?
You know, I understand that he recused himself. He's also involved to one degree or another with respect to the craziness and the attempt to destroy General Flynn. General Flynn, you know, look, he took the plea deal that he did. I think it was under duress or in a coercive way. But nonetheless, you know, that's an unfortunate, sad story with respect to General Flynn. You know, he withdrew from that case. Judge Emmett Sullivan came in for sentencing, and Judge Emmett Sullivan keeps kind of kicking the can on that case, saying, "Well, I want to wait. I'm not going to sentence anybody until I get the full story, because I think what's going to happen, and I think what is happening, is that this sort of abusive process and unraveling of facts with respect to this crazy FISA warrant, I think that it is going to manifest itself or be reflected in some way also with regard to General Flynn. That's just my guess.
I still don't, I want to ask again, do we know any names? The thing was what? Half of it was redacted and still we know this much? So do we know names? Who signed it? Who was the FBI official? Who was the, you know, Justice Department official?
The name of the supervisory special agent who signed the affidavit, which is the detailed facts segment of the warrant application itself, that agent's name has been redacted, I think inappropriately. I know the claim they're going to make. They're going to claim a law enforcement identities exemption under the law. They're also going to claim a counterintelligence mission exemption, meaning that, hey, we can't give this guy's name up because, number one, he's a law enforcement guy in a senior position, and, you know, the bad guys might find out about him. And then, B, he's involved in foreign counterintelligence work, and, you know, essentially he has sort of a covered status.
Hey, Chris, hold on.
I know that'll be the claim, but it's funny.
Chris, there's so much more to talk to you about. Do you have any more time this morning for us?
Sure, I can hold over.
Okay, good. Yeah, tell your boss it's my fault. But I'd love to talk to you about just Paul Manafort and about more about Michael Flynn, Rosenstein, Comey Strzok, the whole business. It's just amazing.
Show.
Yeah, I know. We'll try to keep it down, though. All right, Chris Farrell, the Director of Investigations and Research at Judicial Watch. We'll be right back after this.
For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly elected San Francisco Mayor London Breed stated in her first interview since taking office that things have become so deplorable in the city that there is more feces on the sidewalks than she'd ever seen growing up. We aren't just talking about from dogs. We're talking about from humans. A 153-block stretch of downtown San Fran revealed trash on every block, 100 used hypodermic needles, and more than 300 piles of feces along the 20-mile stretch of streets and sidewalks. Filthy streets, the legacy of regressive policies.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Who is God?
What's he like?
How can we know?
Your answer to these questions will impact your worship, discipleship, apologetics, and evangelism. Learn from Ravi Zacharias, Josh McDowell, Chip Ingram, and more than 60 other speakers at Southern Evangelical Seminary's 25th Annual National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 12th and 13th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Get the early bird discount when you register by August 1st at ses.edu.
Okay, Mr. Smith, if you'll just put your chin on that rest and focus on that point.
What's that?
That's your focal point. And that point affects everything else in the world.
Wait, my focal point. I'm seeing it now.
That's the point.
Oh.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher on American Family Radio, bringing the issues of the day into focus. Weekday afternoons from 1 to 3 Central Time or anytime on the podcast page at AFR.net.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you and happy to be. This is actually a very interesting weekend. It's funny because Congress is not really working like they normally do, so the news cycle is slower than normal, and yet we have these important things happening. In fact, Saturday night, a 400-page FISA application and also follow-up applications in order to surveil Carter Page, alleging the FBI alleging that he was Russian, working with Russian spies to cause Hillary Clinton to lose the election and help Donald Trump. It's pretty amazing. And now we know, because Devin Nunes and others have been telling us for months that this was all based on that tabloid dossier. And now we know, yes, in fact, it was. Judicial Watch is the had subpoenaed for this a long time ago, and it finally came in, even though it was late. It came in Saturday night late and over the weekend, so that, you know, it might not make quite as big a splash. But that's why we're talking about it, because it looks like it's rotten to the core. It is an aberration from normal FBI and Justice Department procedure, where details are followed meticulously and everything is documented and evidence is checked and rechecked, and people sign off and really take that very seriously when they sign off on the veracity of a document like this presented to a FISA court. So that's why this is so important. Now, Chris Farrell is my guest, and Chris is the Director of Investigations and Research at Judicial Watch. And by the way, Chris, really, honestly, I know him. He's probably all over this all the time. Not probably. He is all over this all the time. And so much of what you see Judicial Watch doing is being pushed by Chris, or motivated by him. That is his job. So, Chris, I'm curious about that. Half of it being redacted. Was it half, would you say?
Well, probably, you're being generous. Probably three-quarters of it is redacted.
Now, that must have been stunning right away.
Well, it's excessive, and this is really, frankly, it's part of the sort of institutional protection cover-up of the FBI and the Department of Justice, because they know how much hot water they're in. I mean, they're up to their neck on this one. And so they're going to throw up every possible exemption claim, meaning sort of legal reason to withhold information. You know, the broadest, most sweeping interpretation you could possibly imagine, because they're terrified. They know how bad this is. They know how screwed up it is. And the last thing they want to do, they're going to want to fight over every syllable of every word that we want redacted or want unredacted.
And isn't it highly likely that Rod Rosenstein was one of the people that signed off on one of the warrants?
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so we know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We sure do. It's the third of the series.
So here we go. That's just, and now the first warrant, Comey was still FBI director.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's the other person. And Strzok is the one who pushed all this in the FBI, as I understand it. So those are some characters.
There's even a signature page with Sally Yates on there. You remember her?
Sure. Yes, of course. Sally Yates, who was fired by President Trump in the first, 2 weeks, because she refused to follow a directive he had given her on immigration limitations to suspected terrorists.
She went so far as to reverse the legal finding of her own subordinate organization, the Office of Legal Counsel, who had told the White House, your immigration restrictions are good to go, no problem. So she even, rather than, you know, look, this Sally Yates is a disgrace. She violated her oath of office. She should be disbarred.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings me to, you said that you think the FBI is real nervous and the Justice Department, and they're fighting because of that, which I do too, of course. But what do you know now about Lisa Page's interview behind closed doors last week? Because all I've heard is that she said different things than Strzok. She felt she was a lot more forthcoming and gave a different information. Do you know anything about that, Chris?
I have the same general readout as you do. My analysis of it is that Lisa Page, despite her shortcomings in other respects, she's probably a pretty sharp lady, a pretty smart attorney, and she saw what her former boyfriend did the week before. And my guess, and this is just speculation, I want to be very clear, I'm just guessing at this. My guess is that having seen Strzok's performance the week before, she may see an opportunity to, if not get a grant of immunity, to at least kind of be held or viewed as a cooperating witness, so they don't really lower the boom on her. And so she may have been more frank, more forthcoming, you know, greater details, more documents, that sort of thing.
And, of course, another name that's gone silent that we suspect is turning evidence is also Andrew McCabe. I'm just speculating, too, but it just seems to me that might be the case. All right, I want to ask you about Paul Manafort, because All right. Paul has been indicted by Bob Mueller, and he's, as I understand it, spending 22 hours out of, or 23 hours out of 24 in solitary confinement. You know, the police under Mueller's direction, or the investigators, you know, did a search of his house without any kind of warning, opened the door, his wife was in bed. Just, he has been treated very poorly. I just want to know what your thoughts are about that and how that ties into all of this.
Yeah, Manafort to me is not a terribly sympathetic character, but setting that aside, the level of attention and the techniques and the vigor with which Mueller and company have gone after him, in particular a man by the name of Weissman, who's Mueller's deputy, who's sort of renowned. He has a reputation. I mean, they're being charitable, and they call him a bulldog, but really he also has a reputation, frankly, for sort of just barely within the law dirty tricks. That's sort of his M.O. They've gone after Manafort as though he's a cartel kingpin, right?
Exactly, exactly.
He's a political operator, right? He's a campaign guy. He does, you know, people may not like his ethics or his techniques or his business practices. Okay, that's all fair game. But that doesn't mean he's going around chopping people's heads off, right? He's not a violent felon. He's sort of a white-collar political operator. And the sort of no-knock warrant routine they did on him, the pre-dawn raid, the holding him in solitary routine, this is all for, like, hardened career criminal, violent felon type guys. This is a guy who goes to lunch and trades favors, right? But he's not I'm not forgiving him. I'm not saying, oh, you know, he's a wonderful human being. That isn't the point. But I'm just saying the nature of the crimes or the wrongdoing with which he's accused is really kind of patty cake stuff compared to the sort of treatment and the approach that they're taking. They're really leaning on the guy, and I think they're doing it in an attempt to coerce some sort of, you know, Trump-related gotcha out of all this.
Well, and the irony is, not irony, that's just not even strong enough a word. I was furious. I have to say that. I was personally furious when I read that Bob Mueller had given John Podesta and Tony Podesta immunity. Paul Manafort worked for them. John Podesta headed Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it was his email that were leaked by whatever entity leaked them, WikiLeaks. And then, but they are both, they are such shady characters. I mean, it probably wouldn't be very hard at all. They have Russian dealings, multi-billion-dollar contracts. So they're doing, and they weren't registered agents either of a foreign government, were they?
No, I mean, look, if you're going to go after Manafort, then it is more than reasonable to really have adjoining cells for the Podesta boys right next to him.
But instead you give immunity.
This is picking and choosing winners and losers. And so Mueller's flavor of the moment is to destroy Manafort. But really, frankly, if you're going to go after this whole... And again, this is literally a decade before President Trump's campaign. This has nothing to do with the 2016 election. We're talking about, you know, the Ukraine in 2006. This is madness. But if you're going to go after them, well, go after the business partners, too. Go after the Podesta boys.
All right, so let's go down to the core of this, Chris, because the implications even of this two-thirds redacted 400-page FISA application, we've learned a lot, and it's affirmed the suspicions, and it has proven that this whole investigation was based on nonsense. So, of course, you know the legal term fruit of the poisonous tree. The investigation has been based on something that has no merit, and generally speaking, that means that all aspects of an investigation are set aside. It's over. If it's all based on a straw man, so how about now?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty damning evidence of the whole thing being sort of, ginned up and falsely generated and inflated and puffed up. And certainly anything that would derive from that, that's sort of the notion of the fruit of the poisonous tree. So you've got this illegitimate, unlawful, baseless investigative technique or act that's been done, and then all the things that flow from that really are compromised. So what's the result? How long do they keep playing kick the can? How long do they keep going after, thinly related, if at all, somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody kind of stuff? I don't know how long they can continue to drag this out. The prosecutors are built to get scalps, right? That's what they do. And so they have to, have enough scalps to say, what we did was worthwhile and meaningful. So I don't know where the limit is on that.
Interestingly enough, an article came out yesterday in CNN saying, the title is, "How Long Will Mueller's Investigation Go On?" So in reading it, though, it says there are already some signs that Mueller's office is prepared for an ultimate wind down. Another article talks, this is a Byron York piece in The Examiner. He's talking about why is Mueller handing off key cases, talking about how he's bringing indictments, then handing them off or letting other offices indict. And it's just, it does, God willing, look like they're winding down. What do you think about that? Do you think they might be?
I do. I think it's deflating. It's a slowly deflating balloon. Because, look, even Lisa Page, that text message way back, literally, a year and a half, 2 years ago, said there's no there. So I don't know how long, but you get to keep kicking the dead horse. But, they'll find sort of tangents to go off on and, go after people for old parking tickets or whatever. But I just don't. Even in the latest, crazy phony indictment of the 12 Russian GRU intelligence officers, for the second time, the third time, they explicitly state no U.S. person engaged in any unlawful activity. Okay, we believe you. No U.S. person engaged in any unlawful activity. Why are you still rolling around in this mess? I don't understand it.
Chris, one last question. I know this is an important document, no question about it, and we look forward to seeing what's in that redacted portion. But is there any other document outstanding that you guys, I know you have subpoenas everywhere, so that's maybe too broad a question, but is there another particular document that you think will be key? If this is not the nail in the coffin, is there another one that would be?
I'll give you an idea of scope. I want to add to the lady who manages our Freedom of Information Act request program for us. And I said, Kate, give me a list of everything Russia. I don't care what flavor, what angle, what person, but everything out of that entire world. All things Russia, Russia, Russia. Give me a listing of what we have open. And she came back with more than 200 pending requests.
So there might be more to come, you're saying.
we're very thorough.
Yes, you are. And God bless Judicial Watch and your part in what you do there, Chris. Really, I mean it. I mean it. God bless you. Chris Carroll with Judicial Watch, thank you so much. We'll see you soon. All right. Interesting times. By the way, I was going to get into Judge Jeanine's flap with Whoopi Goldberg last week, and we are going to get into that maybe tomorrow. And Judge Jeanine is going to be our guest, by the way, Friday morning. So you might want to tune in for that. What a great way to start the week. Maybe, sort of. Stimulating, maybe, and you know what? Actually, encouraging news, because truth, man, how can you argue with truth? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.